Today's podcast is with Doug Meacham, inside receivers and tight ends coach at TCU. We had a little bit of audio trouble at the beginning here in the recording, and we're going to get into it with the first question here, where I ask Coach about how he got his start in football.
See, my senior year in college, I played in the Sun Bowl, and I was planning on going to Colorado, living in Breckenridge, being a ski bum for a year. And I'm sitting at the bar with my roommate, and this guy named Glenn Wolf came up and sat next to us at the hotel bar. And his son, Mike Wolf, was my roommate. He was younger than me and my friend, and he asked us if we wanted to be draft assistant coaches at NEO, which is at JUCO in Oklahoma. And I looked at my buddy, he looked at me, and I said, yeah, why not? So that's how it started. I never really planned on coaching. And the guy that was left was a guy named Robert Nunn, who's coaching the NFL for the last 16 years. And so from there, I went to, went and GA'd at NEO. I came back to Oklahoma State for, I guess, a year or so, and GA'd there. And then I got hired at Georgia Military College in Georgia. Glenn Wolf actually left NEO and took that job. I went with him. And I was there a year as the O-line coach, and then the next year I was offensive coordinator. He had left, and my buddy, who's sitting next to me at the bar, he was the head coach. So from there, I met Hal Money and Mike Leeds there at Valdosta State with Chris Hatcher and all those guys. And we did a round-robin practice with them, kind of like the OTA, whatever the NFL does, joint practices. And kind of started talking with guys about air raid and all that stuff. And hired one of the grad assistants and ran air raid ever since. I think the only 3 years I didn't run air raid was the 3 years I was at Oklahoma State with Larry Fedora. He was kind of air raid. He had a lot of other stuff, but it really wasn't air raid. So did that. Got hired at Jacksonville State. I was OC there. Went from there to Henderson State. Was there a year or two. Went from there to Samford for a few years. Then I was at Oklahoma State as a tight ends coach, and then eventually I was coaching receivers and was like passing game coordinator or whatever. Dana Holgerson came over and we worked together for a little bit. And I took the OC job for a year. And then Gary hired me here at TCU for 3 years, 14, 15, 16. And I was at Kansas for basically a year and a half. I got fired in October and then got hired back here in January. So that's kind of my route in terms of jobs and whatnot. But I've always been, air raid for the most part. So, and air raid's a little time. I think people run the mesh route instead of air raid. That's really not what air raid is. The only true air raid there is left is Leach, really, to be honest with you. He's the only one that really runs it. I think all the other guys like Dana and myself and, even Cliff and some of those guys, we still have those principles in there, but there's other things we do as well, a little more prevalent, and some of the RPO stuff that everybody's so shot and ass about. So there is some of that in there, but all the concepts and air raid are in it, so. And how you keep people stuff.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, with air raid, it's not just about the plays and the playbook. It's about the teaching and how you go about doing things. And having talked with Hal before on this podcast and Tony Franklin, those guys will talk a lot about the methodology behind it. So for you, what are some of the most important things in how you're going to be able to put this together, not just from a playbook standpoint, but from how you practice it and continue to teach your players throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean, first it's the install part, which is traditionally your spring and your two-a-days, And it's always the same. If you talk to any of us, I feel quite sure it's always broken up into three in the thirds. The So you have your install, you have, you know, your five categories, you know, your run game, your quick, you know, your screens, your play action, quick game drawback, and you divide it all into thirds. You have a day one install. So what's good about it is when you do it that way, it's all compartmentalized because you don't run – it's not a comprehensive exam. It's like, okay, first practice, day one install, here's these 8 or 10 plays. And then the next practice, you don't run any of those plays anymore. You go to the next day of install, and you run those 8 or 10 or 12 plays. And then the third day, you do the same with a whole other set. And then you usually like have a scrimmage, your fourth practice or a half scrimmage. And you'll come back to day one, you'll run the same play types, but maybe different formation with a different motion, with a different wrinkle to it in terms of formation or motion or whatnot, an alignment, you know, things like that. And it's good because the kids know exactly what to do. You get good reps, you get good film, because all you're really after at that point is film. You know, you're after film, you're after cultivating the next guy, teaching the younger guy, find out who can do what, and only when you find out who can do what is they're playing full speed. If you're running out there handcuffed mentally, then it's hard to identify what's on. So, and even for me, it's easy for me to teach it, it's easy for me to call it and coach it. And when it's just a handful of things in daily increments and stuff and just repeating, you know what I mean? So that's what you do through spring, and you go through, you know, off season, after spring and summer, reflecting back on all the film you got over there. All the assessments you make from, you know, what you can do better, what you did bad, what you need to improve upon, what players can do what, who's the next guy in line, and then you do it all over again in August, you know. So that's kind of the critical part of it, you know, in general. I think another important aspect of the air raid or the style offense that a lot of people run, in my opinion, I'm going to take a page out of Mike Leach's book, is it's not necessarily how, you know, run pass ratio, it's how many different people touch the ball, the dispersion of the ball. That's what balance is to me. There's a million times I've called a 50-50 game where I actually called more runs than passes, but with the box numbers and whatnot, I mean, it sometimes ends up being more pass and run and things like that. So, you know, sometimes with this ORPO world, you just kind of take advantage of what they're doing over there. So, and it's just something that happens in between things. But I just think when you're simple, you can take more time to learn defense as a receiver. You can learn coverages. You can learn, you know, leverages. You can start with man zone. Is it man or zone? Is it single high, two high? Is it mini? Is it six? Is it by the bracket and all this language to understand what kind of holes you need to be in and where you need to be, what's your location. The other thing I think it's a critical, it's concept, not route tree teaching, because I think when you route tree teach, all you know, like you're running an 8 route, that's all it is to it. You're running 8, that's all you're focused on. When you learn it, the concept, and say you're playing a wide receiver, you know what the Z's doing, the H is doing, the X, you know what everybody's doing. So you know what your parameters are as to where you can hook up or locate yourself based on coverage, because you know what the guys on the other side of you are running, because you learn the whole route. And it's the same thing with the quarterback. I mean, he can visualize and picture the whole route in his head, not just dissect 894 swing shoot. So to me, the concept portion of it, and the one word stuff of it, the simplicity of it, the speed of it. I don't think there's near as many rules and sophisticated stuff, and there's a lot less paralysis through analysis, I think, but at the same time, it's not just snap the ball and go wherever you want to. It's here's my route. Now, how do I win on this route without interfering with the continuity of the route based on the coverage? So, those are some things I think in the system that are important.
So you've mentioned that, you know, Mike Leach is the only one really doing the true air raid anymore, and you've been able to incorporate RPOs. You've used some irregular formations. And I think with any offensive coach, I mean, there's always a starting point and there's always an evolution of who they are and what they're able to use. But how have you been able to incorporate some of those things, I guess, into that base framework of the Air Raid?
Well, it really kind of started when I got with Dana, because Dana brought a little bit more run game. And then I and Joe Wickline, we developed that whole three-back stuff that kind of went crazy for a while. Which really all that was a way to get Justin Blackmon single free access coverage out there. You know, because a lot of times you get three backs, you get quarters and cover three, and you can play action, throw stops and outs all day long until they go cover two or they cloud even, and then you can just run football. But just a lot of the bells and whistles with the motions and stuff, because Leach never was a huge motion guy back then, and the toss. You know, the thing that Bob Stitt actually invented was the toss with the inside receivers or out, you know, running, you know, some people call it fly sweep. I call it toss because we're actually pitching the ball to the guy. And from there, it just developed in some other things. And nowadays, with this whole three down, 2-4 eye, zero nose defense stuff, it's kind of morphed in. You got to have some gap scheme in there because you just can't line up and run inside zone all day long. Just the evolution of defense has kind of triggered some evolution on our side of all terms of what we do. Because there for a while, that whole double cloud business was an issue, you know. So I think we've kind of got some answers now to that stuff.
Now, with the toss that, you know, I know guys got together with Bob Stitt and learned that, and I guess the argument has been that it's a faster way to get the football to the edge. I mean, I know there's some advantages in it. What are you like best about the toss as, I guess, the exchange for the speed sweeps?
It's a pass. No, I think the biggest thing for me is if the exchange is fouled up, it's an incomplete pass, you know. And I think the sweep guy can go faster, because when you work on the timing of it, the ball's in the air, he runs through the ball. The ball's just sitting there lobbing in the air, and he runs through the ball. I think he can go faster. I think that exchange may slow down the motion just a little. And then it's the whole, when you're running like power read, counter read with the motion, I think the guy definitely has to slow down. And then you have some exchange issues, you know. But I think the guy can hit it run a little quicker. That's just my opinion. And then if it is an exchange malfunction, it's an incomplete pass.
Yeah, for the first time ever this past year, and I'm in. You know, just outside of Cleveland here in Ohio, Baker Mayfield threw an interception to a defensive lineman on that play.
It's funny you say him, because they ran a play action off of it.
Yeah.
Where he actually tossed the ball up in the air like he was tossing it to the receiver, and he caught it, and it was play action. The quarterback, he tossed it to himself.
Yeah, that was I think he did that two years ago. I don't know that they used it this past season, but yeah, I remember that. And I thought, you know what, that's really brilliant in terms of just what you're trying to do. You get used, the defense used to see it, as soon as that ball pops in the air, it's a run. And now all of a sudden he's got it again. Yeah. I thought that was a pretty innovative use of that play.
Pretty cool. I mean, it may happen by accident, I don't know, but I know that you know, and when you're bringing him across just for the action, you know, you teach him to turn his numbers to the quarterback and have low hands and draw flies, you know what I'm saying? So you completely turn and try to fake and draw flies when you're not getting it, even when you know you're not getting it. It's pretty useful, because you can read, you know, you draw flies and read the run bumper spin, you know, RBS. It helps you know what side to be on as a QB. And it just it looks kind of similar, you know. Just like anything else, it was kind of cool at the time. It was new. And you need to just kind of do it, and that's what you do. Because you spend a little bit of time working on that. It takes a little bit of time to know when to snap the ball, teach the receiver not crowd the quarterback and be right in front of him, because what they do naturally is almost run about 3 inches in front of the quarterback and they can't get the ball. You know, there's several things, but you got a little space in there. He has time to manipulate the angle of the toss to the receiver, but sometimes he can get out in front of him. It takes a little work. So once you get it in, you work it, you want to just run it. So that's the other part.
Yeah, now with that type of a sweep, I know initially when I saw Dana doing it at West Virginia with the guy who was in the pistol and the quarterback, you guys were, I think they even ran some speed option, but at least faking speed option back the other way. What was the thought, I guess, of any kind of complementary type plays off of that toss?
Oh, well, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with it. It's the fact that you can use that as a screen RPO where you actually turn your shoulders. You can bring it through, snap it a little later, and you can run like a bubble, like a ram screen out of it with your motion with the inside zone. It's good for play action because you get that split flow. And it grabs more attention of the backers and helps create some air for your seams and your crosses and things like that in the play action game. When you study motion tape and see what kind of reaction they have to that motion, you know, it helps develop run game, play action, RPOs, you know, everything. Because if you spin the motion or if you bump the motion or you know, all these different things, you idea and you develop a plan based off of that type of motion. So it helps you design some things with that. It's also a way to hide plays. Like you use motion to hide. A lot of times you're trying to hide screens. Like you ran the slow screen in the back a certain way last week, and you add the motion to it to try to draw some eyes, and you got it going the other way. You know, just a lot of things like that. But really, it's a lot of studying motion to see how he adjusts that type of motion.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to shrink them a little bit. You know, you can force them into 3D if they spin. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, you can kind of manipulate what they do based on what the consistent percentages of them, what they adjust to the motion. You know.
So as
hell, just ask Noel.
Yeah, I'll have to.
No. Well, it's more offense than anybody on the planet. So.
In looking at, you know, your evolution here with the different things you've added into your office, what's really, I guess, been a mainstay pass concept for you, that pass concept that, you know, you've loved no matter what you guys have been doing?
Well, four verticals is where it ends and begins, you know. And all the little tags with it and the shallows and how we seam read it and all that stuff with the receivers and Y cross 95. Those two routes there, they'll be around forever, you know. And if you look at it, like when I was out of work last year, I did a 3-year study on all our TCU stuff. Those were the two top dropback routes, hands down. 90 and 95. Some of the other stuff is very good. You know, the mesh route, obviously. I think the mesh route is kind of making a comeback a little bit. I like mesh a lot. I like all curls. Those are kind of staples. Sail is another staple. Shallow is the other one, kind of like a little drive package, however you want to phrase that. But those are always constant. You know, your what we call eight or something called smash. It's actually smash, but there's a little bit more to it than what the normal smash is. And eight, stick, jet, double slant, snag, all that quick game stuff. I love quick game. We have a lot of quick game. I think it's more clear. It's how you build it from side to side, I think. You know, if you're playing a team that's a single high team, two high team, and they're a zone team, you build quick game that fits either or, and that way your quarterback's never handcuffed. They're a man zone team, you have a man side, zone side, and you build it that way. But it's nothing new. It's just concepts that exist that you go from side to side with, you know. So, stick. I don't think there's ever been a day in my life I didn't say, sure, I'll stick more, you know. It's not sexy, but at the end of the day, it's easy. I think that in the world of, RPO, the quick games are dying. A lot of people don't run quick game right anymore, which I'm kind of going the other way. I'm kind of tired of hearing all the RPO crap because it's very good. I think it's good to take advantage of the run fit guy, you know, be it the safety or the alley defender or whatever you got there, the extra defender. But I think defenses have kind of caught up a bit. I think they do a good job of baiting you in the handoff reads and folding back into the box and getting nailed. You know, I mean, they do a better job of like playing they just sit, you know, and then react a little later than they used to. They don't bump with motion quite like they did. They go late, you know. So I think for the quarterback, just being able to have the ability to just hand the damn thing off occasionally is good for a quarterback. I think every run play, there's an attachment to it. I think that poor kid can't rest, you know. And like I said, it gets a little bit gray,
yeah,
as to whether to throw it or not. You know, I think they're doing a better job defensively of trying to manipulate people that are big RPO teams. And so many people do it all day long. I think if you have 10 run plays in a game plan, I think you have about five to six RPOs, and you got a few, you just hand thing off. And maybe a fast screen or something, which to me is not an RPO, that's an RS, so, you know, a little screen or whatever. But I'm talking about sticks and glances and quick outs, you know, true RPO game. I think we're kind of going a little bit different direction there. Maybe not quite as much. You know, you watch USC with Graham Harrell. I mean, they run quick game. It's beautiful. It's clear. It's simple. It's low. And answers and don't answer. It's a little bit more clear for that kid, you know, to me. It gets a little junky, RPO stuff.
Yeah, man. Well.
Not good. I'm not crushing RPOs. I mean, obviously it works because everyone's doing it, but. I just don't think it needs to be an every run play thing.
Yeah, and you do hear a lot of teams that, you know, they'll call themselves an RPO-based team, and you'll ask them about their quick game. We really don't have quick game. And just as you said, you know, not wearing that quarterback out, not, you know, especially if things are frustrating, if things are gray, you probably feel then, you know, exactly like, hey, we got to hand it off sometimes. It's like we're going to, you know, throw quick sometimes without thinking about, do I hand it off or do I run it? And finding the advantages in that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's good, but I mean, you know, the option play is good, but I'm not going to run it every play. You know, quarterback runs, you got about a number, you can run it every snap, but you're going to get him murdered. You know what I mean? She's like, I just think, I don't know. Maybe it's just me personally. No reflection on anybody. Yeah, I'm just kind of tired of hearing about RPO. Yeah. That's me. Now, if you want to know a no game, I mean, yeah, anyone else. I mean, there's a lot of people now. We have all of it. I'll tell you a funny story. About 5 years ago or 6 years ago, me and Sonny Combi and a couple guys were sitting in our office, and high school staff came through and wanted to talk to us about our plays, and they were sitting there, and the coach started off with, well, Coach Meach, we'd like to talk to you about your RPO game, what you do in your RPOs. And I looked at Sonny, and he looked at me the same way, and we were like, what the hell is an RPO? I mean, we didn't even know what it was, you know. And come to find out, I mean, we've been running RPOs for years, but we didn't call it that. You know, stick draw and
right,
all these fast attachments, that's been a decade, but we didn't have the cool name to call it. So I swear against it, I didn't know what RPO was. I said, what does that mean? So we didn't know. It was like just a few years ago, you know?
Yeah. You know, I've seen so much of either the man or, you know, some of the match coverage to as answers to RPO. And then this year, really more than anything, it seemed like everybody – in at every level ended up with mesh or shallow in their playbook as an answer. Saw a lot of it run this year across the country, every conference, every division. It was, but like you said, it doesn't mean they're an air raid team, but I have seen a lot of teams running a version of it. Now, I think in talking to Hal a few months ago, is, you know, his comment was, well, it's not really the same mesh, right? It's going to look
no,
like
they're
that.
Not. They're just running. You're talking about the route that it's real popular. You freely swing back in the boundary. It's mesh, and then you have a guy, another receiver, hook up about 10 to 12 over the ball there, right? That one?
Yeah.
That's not mesh. It's a 1-2-3 read. They're going from back to the mesh guy coming from right to left. You can start to the left. It just goes back, mesh guy, to the guy that's on the OT 10 to 12. That's not, they're not reading mesh. They stay on the run. They don't hook up.
Yeah.
So it's not mesh. It looks like mesh just because there's two guys running shallow, but it's not mesh. I think if you talk to Noel, I know they run that one.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. With well, Noel runs everything, right?
Noel, he runs it. I don't know if he runs everything, but he knows every play. Noel's a good friend of mine. He'll ask. Don't worry about it. Noel's one of the best guys in the whole profession.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's great.
He's
not 100, but he may be 75.
Well, I was on a Zoom with him the other day, and Taylor was on, and his grandson. So we know he's a grandpa.
Yeah, I love Taylor too. I spent a lot of time with him when I was out there, whenever that was. And Kevin took care of me. It was a lot of fun. I learned some football and hung around. Those guys let me hang around, even though I'm the guy that's, out of work. So I appreciate it. Their generosity, hospitality, it was awesome. I learned some football, hung around some guys. It was great.
Well, Coach, the other thing I saw a lot of this year, and again, it's one of those things you see so many people running the shallow, but and I want to say I first saw this maybe from Oklahoma State about a decade ago, but I saw, again, it ended up in just about everybody's playbook, was that shallow that doesn't go across the line of scrimmage, but all the receivers are releasing to block, right? They're just trying to create space. They throw the ball just behind the line of scrimmage. Nobody's releasing on a screen, so you have us downfield blocking, no screen keys.
Yeah, they call it pick. You just tag pick to whoever's the shallow. Like, you can go pick, Y, Z pick. And everybody else, normally what it is, you start off, he was actually running a route concept, actually running shallow. And the running back would block the mic.
Mm-hmm.
He would come out of the backfield and sit in a chair and block the mic, and you just throw it to the shallow guy. A lot of people now are doing it where, like, it's 3rd and 20, and those guys come off the ball, and everyone blocks, and one guy's running shallow. It's that one. But the concept was just called pick. So if you wanted your X to do it, everybody just run like 91, the route concept. The back would block, he'd come through a lot of scrims and block a linebacker, and then you dump it to the shallow, and he caught it on or behind the line right there, because you told him to run through the heel of the D line, which typically by the time he caught it, he was about at the line of scrimmage. But yeah, we put that in the screen category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I mean, think it's a good concept. Especially you got a young quarterback, right? And it's 3rd and long, and you don't want him forcing the ball in anything. I mean, there's no read progression, right? It's drop back and throw the ball to the guy who's running just behind the line of scrimmage. So I think obviously you can't use it every time, but to be able to throw it in there every now and then. And I've seen some creative uses with it. I know Notre Dame was doing a version of that where it looked like the Texas route or the angle route with that guy back coming out of the backfield and then bending back in. Inside receivers look like they're running seams, but then they end up, blocking linebackers, and you got this guy running with the ball up the middle of the field with some blocking. So I thought the interesting thing I expected to see with so many people doing that And because the you know he still got protection back there would be some kind of a fake where you think they're going to block and run that, and then that guy's just sitting somewhere in the middle of the field wide open.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the interesting thing on that play is I saw OU run that play with the quarterback draw. So if they were driving hard on the pit, the shallow, and the back and all that, then the quarterback ran draw.
Yeah.
So it was either pass to the pit or it was QB draw. I thought that was pretty interesting. I saw them do that last season. We don't do that. I thought that was pretty cool. I think the guy over here does a phenomenal job adapting to his talent. He's real smart. I worked with his brother at Kansas, and he's a great guy. He's a real smart guy, real smart. He's a good football coach, good dude. So, but I thought that was interesting. They're running what we call pick, but with they're also they have a QB draw intertwined in the middle of it. So, pretty interesting.
Well, Coach, I know we could sit here and talk scheme all day, and you're great at it. You know a lot of it. But when you look at what you do as a coach, what's the most important thing you do? What's the thing that really, you know, ultimately gives your guys the winning edge?
Well, I think a couple of things. Beyond recruiting, which is probably the most important thing, once you get them and once you have them, I think there's a lot of things to learn. There's a lot of guys that have to adapt to college and how much harder it is than what they're accustomed to. So I think the most important thing to me, which is what to me makes the difference between a good coach and a bad coach. I think there isn't such thing as a good coach and a bad coach. I think good coaches are guys that handle the day-to-day issues with kids that are, you know, those are the guys that are good coaches. Bad coaches that kind of mismanage players throughout the week. And I'm not just talking about game day practice. I'm talking about everything. You know, I think it's critical to handle kids from Sunday to Friday in an appropriate way and be there for them and deal with all the issues, because trust me, they all got them. And so do I, and so do you. But, like, you're expected to be there for them when things aren't going right at home, when the academics are falling apart, when they're just frustrated, when they're struggling in the classroom, when, you know, even when they have social issues, you know, girlfriends, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's what a good coach is. You know, guys who just kind of show up and drive his nose on the board all day long, that's not what coaching is. We do so many more things than coach. Probably 20% of what we do is coaching.
Right.
The rest of it, manipulating, handling, and dealing with players the right way. You know, that's what's important to me. And then just coaching-wise, if you simplify it, the two most important things is making sure that they play with fanatical effort and make sure they're in the right spot. You can do those two things. It doesn't matter who you're playing, where you're playing them, if it's raining, nothing. Fanatical effort, be in the right spot. You simplify it and you internalize it like that, it's easy to play game football, you know. A lot less mental gymnastics.
Yeah, definitely. Coach, for our listeners out there who might be in your recruiting area, where do you recruit?
Well, I have, I have the Dallas-Fort Worth area here and the Metroplex. And then I also have Southern Cal. And I go to Florida a little bit with some of the out-of-pocket stuff I do. I've been recruiting those areas for years, but my home base is right here in the DFW area.
And our listeners, you can follow him on Twitter. It's @Meacham_Doug. And, Coach, I appreciate you taking the time to talk ball with us here on the podcast.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, man.